This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. On the job site. Did you know that a big portion of people who listen to Joy at work, just like you? Right now, times are very tough financially, and without your support, Joy may not be around to help you through your work day. So tell your workmates, your next door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday 10 till 12.
And you're listening to Saturday Magazine, Fiona, Paul and Tass. We wanted to move on our conversation to talk a little bit about Midsummer and how Midsummer went. Did either of you actually attend any of the Midsummer events?
I went to a couple of exhibitions. I didn't see any shows this time, but I went to a couple of exhibitions and they were wonderful. I believe it was a fantastic event this year. Paul, you were at the Pride March, of course.
Yeah, I went to the Pride March. I also went to one show, but also I think on the Saturday breakfast show that I do, Tass, I must have interviewed probably about half a dozen great performers, and I think this year's Midsummer just had such a variety of people. It just showed the true diverse nature of what Midsummer can be about, and there's pretty much something for absolutely everybody.
I thought it was actually a fantastic festival this year. I really enjoyed it. I went to all the iconic pieces, you know, the Carnival, Pride March. I saw a lot of theatre this year. I saw a bit of visual art. I saw a couple of performances. I was actually quite blown by it.
Well, here to tell us all about it is Program Manager for Midsummer, Patrick Hayes.
Good morning, Patrick. Good, a bit damp from the weather in Melbourne this morning, but good, got here eventually.
Yes. Is it raining outside, by the way?
Yeah, just like a constant stream, very London-esque of constant drizzle, basically. Mm. But nice, a good change from the heat that we had over the last couple of days, the humidity.
Now, Patrick, tell us, what does the program manager do? Like, what is your role versus, say, Karen's role?
Yeah, so I guess ultimately we work quite closely in tandem, but Karen's role as CEO is to lead the organisation of Midsummer and kind of figure out those kind of bigger picture conversations.
She also does all the money stuff.
I get to spend the money that Karen gets, which is always a good result. But as a program manager, I help kind of lead in consultation with Karen that artistic vision to make sure that it's speaking to the larger vision of Midsummer, but also kind of guiding those conversations. So a lot of it is ultimately just talking to artists, planning with them, venues.
Well, tell us what the vision is.
Well, let's tell us what your vision will be, because I should alert listeners to the fact that you're new in this role. Yes. You took over from Daniel Santinelli, and you probably didn't make your mark on this festival because it was all in programmed prior. So, I mean, going forward for Midsummer 2021, what are the things that you'd like to see happen?
So I've only been in the role for about 3 months. I started in November, so I delivered definitely Daniel's vision for 2020, which he did an amazing job at doing a program. I think the constant feedback has just been how strong the Midsummer presents, but also just the open access. And I think that is a no short to what that kind of central core program helps kind of give structure and power.
What
to
do
the
you
voices.
Mean, central access?
Also, the open access.
Open access.
Is
what
the,
do you mean by that?
So there's the Midsummer Presents program, which is the ones that Midsummer has more of a stronger hand in guiding or producing themselves. And then the Open Access Festival is basically just an artist who has a venue and a work and wants to pay the registration to be included in the guide, put on the website, is part of that. And I think it's a very big part of Midsummer. And it helps us give a platform for voices that we may not even know want to be heard in the Midsummer Chorus, I guess. And it's a big part of it. So there's 194 events. I think about 44 to 50 of them were Midsummer Presents, and the rest of them were actually open access events that kind of come on board and present under the Midsummer umbrella. The Midsummer Presents program, which is stuff like Queer Unsettled, which was 14 works that kind of had a focus on First Nations and Pacifica artists.
Yep.
We also have the Midsummer Presents that's like the big names like Extravaganza and those kind of events that kind of play out with our bigger partners. Often those kind of programs, specifically with Queer Unsettled and Body, focus on those voices that aren't always heard within the communities and trying to create stronger supports and platforms for them. I'm aiming to keep that going.
We're
obviously a bit early out from next year, but...
But I'm sure you're already planning and
starting to have those conversations. Nothing concrete enough that I could really mention or speak to it. But in the future, in the few years, I want to make sure we do like a disability-focused program. I want to look at some of the genres that don't get highlighted a lot. There's a lot of digital art within the queer spaces that don't find their ways into arts festivals because they're video gamers or designers or bits and bobs. Just kind of trying to talk to some of the bigger, broader aspects that we don't see in Midsummer very largely yet.
So, Patrick, looking back on the last show, what's been the community reaction to it? How's the community responded to the festival this year?
Ultimately, the feedback that I've been getting from artists and the community has been quite positive. There's obviously always some feedback. I mean, it's great to get that from people, and we can always improve and better festivals. I think it'd be very silly of me to say it was perfect. But we had a really great vibe of community. I think I saw a lot of people smiling and commenting on how safe and welcome they felt at certain events. It's also great to get the feedback when people weren't at certain other events, which I also take as a point of, though it's awful that we get that feedback, it's also great that people feel comfortable enough to let us know when we've had shortcomings.
Definitely.
And we can improve. The Queer Unsettled program really went off. The last weekend, which was one of the big suite of projects that I was helping work on at the convent, which was Family, Blow and Drop Deadly Gorgeous, the pageant, just had a great vibe the whole night. Like about 300 people each night, just really pumping, good energy. And just a lot of communities that you don't often see in these spaces, really getting a chance to.
I noticed have a party. You've also taken the program out into the regions and the outer suburbs.
Yeah.
So there are events happening in places like Preston and Williamstown and Altona.
Yeah.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, well, I think ultimately, as a festival, like, people are queer everywhere, really. And
they
it's
certainly
great to,
are.
And it's great to kind of see those programs happening out. And there's also those, like, council, like, West Gay and stuff like that.
A lot of the local councils, like, you do things with Maribyrnong and some of the out-of-Western councils. They want to get on board as well because they want to be able to provide access to some really super fun events in their communities.
Yeah, absolutely.
So people don't always have to come into town to participate.
Yeah.
And also because there's often a lot of family-friendly aspects to it, which means that they can tick lots of boxes and have a good time at the same time.
It's also important to, like, recognise that there's also, as much as there's kind of a, what I would say is a professional gay stereotype that happens, there's also quite a low socioeconomical part of the queer community, which can't always travel the extra hour to come into the city and see stuff, which is why it's so important to talk to these councils and build up that natural and local vibes for them to
engage. Patrick, we're nearly out of time, but... can you give us any a sense of some of the numbers? Like, was this the biggest ever? Did you have the largest attendance at Carnival? Pride seemed to go on forever this year.
I think Pride, we definitely hit some records. Carnival, not so much, just because we had those weather warnings hanging over our heads. And toxic air that Australia had to deal with also drove. But we also had standard numbers. So having normal numbers with those effects on was amazing. We had over 10,000 marches this year for the 25th anniversary.
Is that the largest ever?
That's the record that I've been told is broken. I have not been around long enough to be absolute authority, but I've been told
it did seem to go on for a while.
Yeah, we had about including the marches.
I loved it. I'm not complaining.
I have to say, I thought the atmosphere this year was pretty special, and I've never seen it so deep, almost consistently throughout the parade route.
it was a really good vibe all the way out. And also we were blessed, as much as like things that had changed from the team, putting better systems in place, but also the weather was obviously a lot better.
It was the perfect day.
Without 40 degree heats and things like that. Which meant we also were able to celebrate at the Katani Gardens at the end and have people hang around, not just be like, great, I've done my march, I've shown my pride, I need to go home, it's too hot. I think we had about 55,000 across the day, including the marches. So that's also a great number.
And so the move to 11 a.m. seems to be, this will be the second year, so that move to 11 a.m. seems to have
Working well, I think it means that we can kind of do the march in the day where it's least hot, which is also still something I'm getting used to from Brisbane, because the like, hottest is normally like 12 o'clock, but it always seems to be about 2-3 in Melbourne. But it also means we can kind of go for that celebration vibe. We don't want to go too crazy because Carnival gets the tea dance party, but Pride March kind of gets that lovely bands by the beach, sit down, just enjoy, and a lot of people just kind of sitting on the grass listening to music and just enjoying.
I've often thought it'd be really nice to actually have a big dance party at the other end.
Well, if we get later, it might, there might be some projects in the future where there'll be other dance parties that'll be popping up in different places. But yeah, I think it's
like
kind
a daytime
of,
beach party sort of thing would be
fantastic. People were definitely doing a small mosh pit with Laura and Brulia was definitely getting on. Who knows what the future
ramp
will
hold. Ramp it up, I say. Patrick, congratulations on a great program.
Thank you so much.
I mean, I really enjoyed participating in it. I thought it'd be nice to just sort of do a bit of a reflection piece. And obviously, we'd love to have you back in during the course of the year as your plans unfold.
Yeah.
And we know where you're going with it.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to be back.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.